Hello, welcome to the Bev Moore Show, live streaming on the iHeart Network on over 185 broadcast stations in 37 countries. I'm your host, Bev Moore. In continuing the celebration of Women's History Month, my guest today joins us to talk about extraordinary efforts being made to honor the legacy of Josephine Baker. Known as one of the first international African-American movie stars, Chef Ashbel McElveen is my guest today. He is the founder of the James Hemming Society, a filmmaker, entrepreneur, and contributor to High on the Hog Netflix TV series. My interview with Chef Ashbel is coming up. Stay with us.
So
come back, Chef McElveen talks about his London-based restaurant, Ashbells, where patrons include the new queen consort, Camilla. He says his career has opened doors to meet celebrities, including Martha Stewart, rapper Snoop Dogg, and former U.S. President Donald Trump, while on the set of NBC's Today Show. Stay with us to hear highlights of Chef Ashbell's incredible career, inspired by his family's Southern cuisine roots.
Hi, I'm Carson Kressley. Of all the most valuable resources in the world, kindness is the most precious. For more than 140 years, American Humane has been working to make the world a kinder place for animals. Rescuing those caught in disasters, protecting animals on our farms, on the silver screen, and the world's remarkable and endangered species who need our care to help them survive. All of us can make a difference by making humane choices at the supermarket, in our choice of entertainment, and by supporting conservation and rescue efforts. It's not hard at all. Make being kind a lifestyle choice and visit AmericanHumane.org for simple ways you can help build a more caring, compassionate, and humane world for animals and for all of us.
You're listening to The Bev Moore Show, broadcasting on the iHeart Network worldwide. I would like to welcome my guest, Chef Ashbell McElveen, four-star chef, restaurateur, international media personality, and lifestyle guru. Welcome to the show, Ashbell.
Thank you, Beth. Thank you so much. I am thrilled to be here.
Chef Ashbell, I must say, your story is beyond extraordinary. discovered cooking from down home family cooking.
Yes.
Then traveled the world soaking up the ethnic of culture. Tell us a little bit about your past, where you grew up.
I was born and raised in Sumter, South Carolina. And I was born into a family that thought good food was their birthright. And my father made incredible barbecue. The family was known for barbecue. And he and his brothers were incredible distillers. So they made moonshine and bourbon. And on my mother's side, they were just fine cooks. And a part of that, you know, bastion of folk who, you know, in segregated South Carolina, because that's how I grew up, in segregated South Carolina, and I went to schools segregated by law. And it made an indelible impression on me. And now I am so happy that I had that training from Black teachers who in my formative years in school actually taught me about Black history, and instead of what was approved in the censored books that we were allowed to read in South Carolina, the official books that just only had one page with five Black children sitting on a fence, and the caption was, "Future cooks and servants of proud South Carolinians." And I thought, wow, well, I'm certainly not that. From a very early age, I was just very curious. And, and during segregation, I had doctors, lawyers, and Indian chiefs as neighbors. So that, you know, you'd walk down, there's two houses down was a college professor. Two streets over was an architect and a doctor. And I had all of these incredible role models that were Black. And I could see myself achieving things through them. So I didn't feel like I didn't, that I didn't have possibilities. And that's the main thing about growing up in that whole segregated Jim Crow system, was that I saw possibilities that, you know, very modern kids don't see. You know, I had these incredible role models all over the place. And as a kid growing up, everybody in your neighborhood could discipline you. So you were kept on the straight and narrow. You weren't allowed to be, you know, running around the neighborhood acting wild and stealing things or causing trouble, because every adult that knew your parents could discipline you in a flash. And mm-hmm. God forbid if they ever had a chance to something serious enough so that they would tell your parents. You were almost right. Like dead meat after that. So your strong
roots really kept you going. I mean your platform that helped you rise above. So after you traveled the world, you returned to the U.S., then branded and distributed your own food products.
Yes.
You were also an executive chef for high-profile restaurants. Is that right?
Yes. While I was in London, I opened Ashbel's Restaurant and got a 4-star review from the Sunday Times of London, and had, you know, so many incredible patrons in the restaurant. And one of my key patrons is the new queen consort, Camilla. She came to my restaurant twice, and I did a summer pavilion, and still the only black chef who's ever gotten a commission in a Royal Park. And that was at the Princess Diana Gallery at the Serpentine, where I had a summer cafe, Ashbel's at the Serpentine. And I was really kind of doing all of this because of that know-how, just do it. That's how I was brought up in the South Carolina roots are so strong. And it's just stop talking, do. And it made an indelible impression on my whole life. And I
you were not just the first African American, you were the first American too.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. The first American to be invited into a Royal Park. And that was
that's what I thought.
Yeah, that was 20 years ago, and I was in London
Wow.
over the holidays and really visiting with a new generation of Gen Z chefs. And when I showed up, I did not expect the reception that I got, because these guys were just, and men and women, young men and women, they were like, come touch my forehead. I was like, why? No, just get over here and touch my forehead, will you? You know, look at what
I'm doing. You're right. You really got a lot of recognition. Now, you caught the attention of Robert De Niro, President Bill Clinton, Patti LaBelle, and other celebrities who engaged your services.
That was something wonderful. And I got to tell you, one of the most interesting of all the celebrity folk was that when they were filming Ocean's 11 in Brussels, the crew sent over a request for me to come to Brussels from London and cater a lunch for them. And that was amazing. So meeting all of these celebrities, and there were faces that I recognized, but what they loved about me was that I was like, oh, well, you want to eat, sit down, because your celebrity doesn't mean anything at this table. Everybody's the same at this table. So eat and be an act human.
You just became a part of the whole network society. You then grabbed the attention of NBC television and became a presenter on WNBC Weekend Today Show. Is that right?
Yeah, that was an incredible experience in New York. I was on the Weekend Today Show, and you know, that's where I met people like Matt Lauer and Martha Stewart and others. Donald Trump too. Actually, I cooked. I'm the only chef that's ever cooked with Donald Trump on the air. And he actually attended a party at my house in Harlem that the Canadian embassy had rented my house to hold an event, and Donald Trump was one of their guests. I always say, out of all of the crazy things that's been going on since then, because at that time, Donald Trump was hanging around with Snoop Dogg and Chuck D. So a totally different from the Trump now, okay?
Uh-huh.
I say that he did three things that I like. He agreed to cook with me in the Plaza Hotel when he owned that. And we did a whole Mother's Day special. And and later he introduced me to Diana Ross. And I was absolutely thrilled at an event at the Apollo Theater in Harlem. He said, come here. I want you to meet somebody. And then he stepped aside and it was Diana Ross. I was like, oh, I was just speechless. I could barely speak. And I, I just realized that that God had an interesting path for me. That's all I can say about that. So,
that is fantastic. Just fantastic.
Yeah.
The many people that you've met through your experience. Now, you're currently launching a new line of specialty foods, bespoke cuisine, a new beverage product.
I launched Ashbel Smoked Meats and Seafood when I came back from England. I spent about 10 years living in Paris and about 14, 15 years living in England, mostly in London. And when I came back, I started to smoke salmon on my friend's back porch. And ended up selling it in Rittenhouse Square in Philadelphia for $50 a pound, my special smoked salmon. And it was just a part of that whole ethic of South Carolinians. So do something. Do something. And I remember one of my aunts on my father's side, one of my great aunts, Laura, she cooked at the Willard Hotel in Washington, D.C. And when she retired, she traveled around the family and she would stay 2 or 3 months at each house. And when she was showing me a recipe for cooking mushrooms, and I was very, very suspicious of the recipe because I'd grown up hearing that mushrooms were poisonous and you could die eating them. And I was like looking and in her mouth while she was telling me this recipe, and she said to me, "Stop looking in my mouth. Look at what I'm doing.
Look at what you're doing, quit watching my mouth."
Look at what I'm doing. And that is exactly how cooking traditions pass from generation to generation in the Black community. People can say anything out of their mouths, but look at what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Look at what I'm doing. And that admonition definitely helped me to really understand Southern food and Southern regional food as a cuisine, not just as a cooking. It has the depth and breadth of flavor to be a real cuisine. And
I can say that for sure. Absolutely.
He heard my cry.
My interview with celebrity chef Ashbel McElveen continues. When we come back, Chef Ashbel talks about his contribution to the Netflix TV series High on the Hog. Stay with us to hear more about his amazing accomplishments as a culinary arts chef.
No matter who we are or where we come from, we all experience difficulties in life.
Military veterans know that sometimes it takes strength and determination to make it through.
Whether it's physical challenges or struggles on the inside, it takes strength to ask for help when you need it.
Learn how veterans like us have reached out for help and hear stories of strength and recovery at maketheconnection.net.
Let's talk about High on the Hog on Netflix.
Yeah, that is a huge program. And Jessica Harris, I've known for years and years and years. And actually, one of her first books, Iron Pots and Wooden Spoons, is how I got really interested in the history of African Americans and Black Americans cooking in America and how foundational that was. Now, I didn't appear in the series, but my name is the first to roll on the credits as a contributor. So I was very happy to be a part of that project and bring the historical references that needed to be mentioned in it. Because, you know, our home state of South Carolina is key to good food, too, in America in particular. And I'm very proud of that.
That's great. Well, doesn't it trace the African-American cuisine, like, through lines from Africa to Texas?
Yeah, well, it does. It does. But that line went back to Texas, which is a later part of how that cuisine developed. And what it should have done, if I had one criticism of the series, was that that line should have gone back deeper into the southern states and not end on the barbecue of Texas, because barbecue was happening in South Carolina in particular, and Alabama and Georgia long before it was in Texas.
That's why I
knew that. And in particular, you know, barbecues were the way that politicians try to get your vote, is that they throw a big barbecue and, you know, and invite you, and they'd have lemonade and barbecue, and it was a free day to get your vote. That was political fundraising and political, more than fundraising, political voting. You know, you got people to vote by how good the food was. And it was Black American, mostly men, who were the pit masters. And my family was right up in there. And, you know, you don't see that today in all of these shows and et cetera.
And you think that
only, you know, people of color were nowhere around barbecue, and it was just another thought. But in fact, you know, we were the proponents of barbecue. We're the ones who made barbecue famous in the South. And
we have set the record straight, haven't we? Right here today on this show. That's what we set out to do. Well, let's talk about Josephine Baker, the project, the performer, the renowned performer, World War II spy, and activist. I mean, she's one of the most successful African American performers.
Yes, she is. And I literally, when I was 19 years old and a student in Paris, a friend came to my house one night, and I lived on the fifth floor walk-up. And I was like, he came to my door, he's knocking on the door and out of breath for walking up five flights of stairs. And he said, what are you doing for dinner? And I said, oh, I have some cheese and some bread and stuff and some wine. So come on in. Let's, you know, we can share what I have. So he said, no, I want to take you to dinner. And I said, okay. So he took me to dinner, which was ironically about a block away from my house in a very, very chic area. And on the Quai d'Orsay, which is a very ritzy part of Paris facing the river. And we got into this building. We walked into this building. It was just luxurious, old world money and all of that. Got into the elevator, went up to, I think, the third floor. And it was one of those old style Parisian apartments that were huge, that had at least 11 or 12 rooms. And so we're ushered into the dining room, and I thought, what am I doing here? Why are we here? And there were two tables of about five or six people, and at one of the tables was Josephine Baker. And I was just absolutely thrilled. I was thrilled. So, of course, I was seated at the table that she wasn't at. I was at the other table. And at one point, when they were getting ready to serve dessert, she made eye contact with me, and I smiled, and I said in English, hey, St. Louis girl. And she jumped up from the table, ran over to me, and started hugging me and kissing me, and she said, you know, are you from St. Louis? I was smothered in these incredible feathers and the smell of her perfume, I can still smell it today.
Oh,
she was
wow.
kissing me on both cheeks. She said, you're from St. Louis? You're from St. Louis? I said, no, ma'am. I'm from South Carolina, but my father and I loved you so much. And she just kept hugging me and hugging me. So the hostess came up, and she was behind Josephine, but she was looking at me like, I don't know who you are, you scrub. Get out of here. Leave her alone, basically. But she was still holding on to me and kissing me. And she was like, the hostess was said, chérie, viens là, you know, to introduce her to the other people. And she was whisked away from me, but she gave me that dazzling smile and a kiss on the cheek, au revoir. And it's a memory that I will never forget. And
no, you won't. I can only imagine.
And when the French honored her in the Pantheon, I was invited to the service by her son, Brian. And it was the most spectacular honor that any American, male or female, black or white, has ever gotten from any country, anywhere. It was spectacular. They showed African American culture and achievement to the world. And that's never been done for any American ever. And I was so embarrassed by the U.S. response. It was so mediocre that I started working with a group, an international group of people, to build a living legacy to Josephine Baker called La Maison Josephine. And that has evolved into a petition, a worldwide petition, to get her recognized by the awards community for her groundbreaking work in films and motion pictures and stage, and just be the incredible legacy of her life. We're looking to build two centers, one in St. Louis and one in Paris, so that we can give other artists opportunities regardless of race, religion, or sexual identity. An opportunity to be a part of her overall theme of a rainbow coalition, and that's why she adopted 12 young kids children from all races and religions, and that was her rainbow tribe. And such, it was such an incredible accomplishment that she's being honored this month, Women's History Month, by the African American women in cinema. And they've created and awarded the first Josephine Baker Award. That's going to be given to a prominent celebrity, and I'm just glad to be a part of that coalition and committee, international committee that's building a living legacy to her. So,
yeah, it just makes you feel blessed to be a part of it, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I feel that I owe her a debt. I really feel that. And just being in Paris, it was James Hemings who was in Paris.
That's what I want to talk to you about is the three nearly erased stories of James Hemings and his students. The correspondence indicates that it was Thomas Jefferson's idea that Hemings travel with him to France for the purpose of the art of cookery, to learn how to cook in Paris. And so I want to talk and touch about that, if we could.
Well, I'm glad we're talking about this, because that's about all that Thomas Jefferson did was bring James Hemings to Paris. And Thomas Jefferson never spoke French fluently. He could read it and write it, but he couldn't speak French. He never did learn how to speak French fluently. But 19-year-old James Hemings went to Paris for that express purpose of becoming a French chef. And he, in the 1785, when they landed in France, it was James Hemings who Jefferson gave money to arrange for the travel from the port to the city of Paris. And James Hemings not only did that, he brought money back and had done it in a very efficient way. And I was just very interested in this whole character who was such an incredible individual that back in 1993, I did a dinner at the James Beard House in New York as a tribute to Thomas Jefferson and the Africans that cooked in his kitchen. I didn't know much about James Hemings, but about 3 or 4 months after that dinner, I was awakened in the middle of the night in a cold sweat. And I knew that I had been wakened up by a hant. And as South Carolinians know, a hant is a not too happy ghost, okay? And all I can hear ringing in my ears was, how can you of all people forget about me? And it took me a little while to wrap my head around the fact that it was the ghost of James Hemings coming to me to say, tell the real story. Get the real story out.
That the Lord of all the earth would care to know my name, would care to feel my hurt. Who am I that the bright and morning star would choose to light the way for my ever wandering heart? Not because of who I am, but because of what you've done. Not because of what I've done, but because of who you are.
Coming up, Chef Ashbel shares how proud he is to work on a TV series called James Hemings in Paris, a show created to introduce James Hemings, an American slave who became a well-known top chef in Paris.
As Americans, there's one thing we can all agree on: the promise of our Constitution and the hope that liberty and justice is for all people. But here's the truth. Attacks on our constitutional rights, yours and mine, are greater than they've ever been. The right for all to vote, reproductive rights, the rights of immigrant families, the right to equal justice for Black, Brown, and LGBTQ plus folks.
We protect everyone's rights, the freedom of religion, the freedom of expression, racial justice, LGBTQ rights, the rights of the disabled. We are here for everyone.
For over 100 years, the ACLU has fought on behalf of millions of Americans, protecting our vote and our voice. I believe in the ACLU because they're for real. To learn more about how the ACLU is fighting for your rights and mine, go to myaclu.org today.
I'm Nyheim Hines, running back for the Indianapolis Colts and proud supporter of the Muscular Dystrophy Association. My mom was diagnosed with muscular dystrophy when I was 14, and I watched her struggle. But MDA helped her get the best treatments and care, and they also help kids like my buddy Ethan.
My name is Ethan, and I'm 12 years old. Thanks to the Muscular Dystrophy Association and people like you, I have more hope than ever before. From day one, they've treated me like family at my local care center. MDA is the only one that funds over 150 care centers across the U.S. to help provide state-of-the-art care for adults and kids like me.
For over 70 years, MDA has been transforming the lives of people living with muscular dystrophy, ALS, and other related neuromuscular diseases. They fund the research for breakthrough treatments, care, and cures. And MDA provides support to thousands of families like mine and Ethan's in communities like yours. Thanks to MDA, kids and adults can live life to its fullest. Join us and learn more at MDA.org today.
Let's talk about what James Hammond's, the dishes that he's brought to America. You know, we're talking about macaroni and cheese. We're talking about ice cream.
Yeah, well, French vanilla ice cream, macaroni and cheese, French fries.
Yeah.
Whipped cream, meringues. For your lemon meringue pies, and the very stove technology, the potager stove technology he brought back from Paris.
Wow.
He's the great grandfather of the stove you're cooking on today. And he's never gotten that credit, but he was, you know, what he learned, and he was trained at the Chateau Chantilly in Paris, and Jacques Pepin, the French chef who cooked with Julia Child. He says in my film, Ghost in America's Kitchen, he said, James Hemmings, it took Chef Jacques Pepin 8 years to learn what James Hemmings did in a year and a half. He said that he had to be extraordinary to understand that concept.
To learn and understand that. Yeah.
In just a year and a half. And that really just kind of focused the abilities that James Hemmings have. And when we talk about those dishes like macaroni and cheese and French fries, they went from his enslaved kitchen at Monticello to be international global dishes. And that, not from the country of origin, but from that enslaved kitchen at Monticello. So for me, Jefferson has been because of those very talented enslaved chefs, Jefferson has been credited for creating fine food in America when it was the Black hands that made and served the food that put fine taste into his mouth. And James Hemmings was the head of that, and he laid the standard in Paris for people like Josephine Baker, that standard of creative excellence. That African Americans from Josephine Baker, James Baldwin, and Condé Cullen, and Maya Angelou, and so many others followed in the years ahead, even if they didn't know that James Hemmings had laid the standards that they all followed. And they not only enriched the French, but they enriched the rest of the world through their art. So that, for me, making the documentary with Anthony Worm was seminal to to bring this story to the average American public. And I'm very proud to say that I'm working on a TV series called James Hemings in Paris to give everybody a view of what James Hemings faced in Paris and what he surmounted and accomplished, and his returning to America and returning to slavery when he could have remained in France and working as a top chef. He could have remained there and made a life there, but he believed in the words that Jefferson wrote, even when Jefferson didn't believe in the words for people of color. And he
That's what struck me is that Jefferson, you know, he asked for, was the letter of invitation.
Jefferson
didn't want to write that letter. To a black man,
When Jefferson became president in 1803, appointed by the Congress, not elected by the people, he was appointed by the Congress. But when he became president, he sent his secretary to Baltimore, where James Hemings was cooking in a tavern, and said, come to Philadelphia, come to Washington immediately and become the chef at the White House. And James Hemings said, I'd be happy to, if only he would write me a few lines of invitation. And Jefferson, being the racist that he was, refused to write a letter to a black man. He was thinking about austerity, and he didn't want to write a letter to a black man, even though that black man, James Hemings, was uncle to his children.
Right.
Because James Hemings was half brother to James and Sally, or half brother and sister to Jefferson's wife, Martha. They're the same father, John Wells. And even with all of that, Jefferson refused to write the letter, but James stood his ground and he would not come. He stood up to the most powerful man in his universe and said, no. You're not going to treat me like you did when I was your slave. I'm a free man, and I demand you respect me as a free man. Now, that was planting the standard for African-American, Black Americans' resistance, and that's the bone, the backbone, and the fiber of the Civil Rights Movement and of all the achievements that we've had since then, with getting and demanding respect. And I'm so proud of James Hemings for doing that in 1803. He refused to come to the White House to be the chef unless Jefferson wrote a letter. So what Jefferson did was he wrote a white Frenchman the letter of invitation. And a Frenchman that had been in the U.S. for 10 years and had missed the whole food revolution in France that James was in the middle of. So, but James had the last laugh because his students, Francis Hearn Fawcett, Edith Fawcett, and Ursula Granger, were brought to the Jefferson White House to teach the white French chef James's style of cooking, which was a fusion of that he created in Paris of half Virginian plantation food and half fine French cooking. And that was a style that Jefferson loved eating. So those three women were the first, they were students of James Hemings, and they went to the White House to teach the white chef James's style of cooking. And I'm so grateful that, you know, Women's History Month, Frances Hearn Fawcett was the one who actually stayed longest in Washington. And she State during both terms of Jefferson as president. And when he retired to Monticello, she was the chief cook and the chef at Monticello. And the great thing about her is that she, with her son, when Jefferson died, Jefferson had still kept her in slavery because he was mortgaging all of his enslaved people so that he could keep up his lifestyle of fine dining and fine wines. But he mortgaged everybody because, you know, enslaved people were property at that time. They were your licenses and your cars. It was that kind of equivalent. When he died, Edith was bought by a professor at University of Virginia, and later got her freedom from him. But she's so important because a group of Virginians migrated to Ohio, and they settled in Chillicothe. I actually went to the church that they founded in Chillicothe, Ohio, and it was just being in that sanctuary would give you goosebumps. And she, along with her son, brought fine food and fine dining, opening a catering business in Cincinnati. And that was where fine food and fine dining started to come from the East Coast to the middle of the country for the first time.
That's great. And we're going to have to end it here, but is there anything else you want to say as a close, at the close of our interview, just to finish us out? Because this has been so much history that you've shared that I know a lot of people don't know about. And with Black history, just everything. So is there anything else you would like to share as a close since we are at the end of our interview?
I would. I wish that everybody would go and see Ghost in America's Kitchen. It's on Amazon Prime, and it's the first in a trilogy of films that I'm making on James Hemings. And that I'm working on the second series now, which is James Hemings in Paris. It's the American Bridgerton. It is that absolute incredible story. And so I encourage you all to go see Ghost in America's Kitchen by Anthony Wareham, the director, and myself. And that will be your first introduction to this incredible American patriot and chef.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Chef Ashbell, for being a guest on the Bev Moore Show. We wish you continued success with your endeavors and everything that you do.
Thank you so much, Bev. I am delighted to be here. And as fellow South Carolinian, yes, we keep trucking. That's what we do.
Yes, we do. We keep trucking.
That's our show for this week as we celebrate Women's History Month during the month of March. I hope you enjoyed my interview with international TV celebrity Chef Ashbell McElveen, who shared amazing information on efforts being made to honor the legacy of African-American movie star Josephine Baker. Thank you for listening to The Bev Moore Show, live streaming on the iHeart Network worldwide. I'm Bev Moore. Until next time, bye-bye.